This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins us live in studio every Friday to talk history, and today we're talking about the University of Virginia Cemetery, which, you know, in another life, I pretend to be a historian of the university, and I'll be honest with you, I never knew that there was a cemetery already there. I thought, like everybody else, you build the university and they need a place to bury people. And
well, if you read the newspaper and the magazine articles, everybody thinks it was established, you know, in 28. But if you walk the cemetery and you see the gravestones, you realize there were at least three that predate the founding of the university. So something was already there.
Right.
Either something was already there or they were moved there. They had died someplace else. But these were people not affiliated. And at least one case, they were not affiliated. So my supposition is it was already a cemetery.
Yeah, and you're saying there is a grave marker there that dates to 1807.
1807, right.
And, of course, the university, they got the charter in 1819. They opened
right.
for business in March of 1825.
Right. Right. And that's a perfect segue into this quiz question. Let's do a quiz.
Okay. Yeah.
As Coy just said, the charter with the name University of Virginia was granted in 1819. And, of course, the UVA first opens its door 6 years later in 1825. But the corner stone of the first building at a very famous cemetery was laid at a very famous ceremony was laid in 1817. Okay, but it wasn't for the University of Virginia. So that building, that's Pavilion Number 7. When they were erecting it, it was part of an institution by what name? That's the question.
So what was the University of Virginia called before it was called the University of Virginia?
In 1817, because it also had a name before that.
The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you want to. And you think you know the answer to this question. I bet there's some old-timers around town who will know that. We'll give you some Dairy Queen ice cream and a car wash, a free car wash, compliments of Express Car Wash, locations all around town. Charlottesville, Route 29 North, Hampton. They got a Hampton? In Hampton. Okay. Express Car Wash. You get a free car wash and some ice cream. If you think you know, 977-1070 is the phone number. If you think you know, what was the name of the University of Virginia before it was the University of Virginia?
That's
and
right.
Just to fill in a little bit of the background there, Jefferson was going to go ahead and build it, and then you sort of use that as sort of like, you know,
it became a launching pad for the University of Virginia.
I describe it like this. If you want a football franchise, you want an NFL franchise in your town, the first thing you do is you go ahead and you build the stadium.
There you go.
Just so you show the commissioners that you're really serious. You go ahead and you get the vendors, you sell the tickets, you make the t-shirts, just to show, look, we're really serious. We want this team. And that's what Jefferson was doing with the college that he was building. He wanted to show the guys in Richmond, I'm really serious about having a university
here. That's right. Well, when they had that get-together up at Rockfish Gap, the Rockfish Convention, to decide where the University of Virginia was going to be in 1819, that was one of the things that won the argument in Jefferson's favor is, look, we've already begun work on these buildings. These buildings have been underway for 2 years now.
Right, right.
So we're already building it in Charlottesville.
And he knew, as a hint to listeners, he knew that the folks in Richmond were looking for a central location.
That's right.
To put this university.
That's
Bob
right.
is on line one. Bob, thanks for the call. What was the name of the university before it was UVA?
Blind, I have no idea. Blind guess, Central College or Central University.
Absolutely right. Central College. Nailed it.
That's exactly right.
Were you really guessing?
I absolutely was guessing.
That's fantastic.
Well, that's a great guess. Bob, hang on just a minute. And Matt, he's on line one, and we'll tell you how you can get your free car wash and some ice cream. Jefferson called it Central College.
Central College. And just like you were saying, Jefferson shows up at this convention at Rockfish Gap with a map of Virginia, and he proved to the other people, you know, William and Mary wanted to be the University of Virginia.
Yeah.
Washington College wanted to be the
Later
University
Washington
of Virginia.
Later Washington and Lee.
Yeah. That's right. Well, Jefferson proved with this map that the location in Charlottesville was in the geographic center of the state, but also the population center of the state. And everybody thought, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And plus, it's named Central College. So how could he be wrong?
That's right. That's right.
Way to go, Bob. You're the big winner. We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian, and the University of Virginia Cemetery. Let's talk about some of the folks that are buried there, because I tell you, if you've never been there, you just drive out there. It's in McCormick and Alderman Roads.
That's right.
You park. You can walk around. It is just beautiful. I mean, an incredibly beautiful, peaceful place. And every headstone has such an amazing story.
And there's some people there. Some of my favorite folks are from the first, the very first faculty. And one of those is Charles Bonnycastle. And you'll probably recognize his name because one of the older dorms, I think those dorms that were built in
probably 20s.
Those were from the 20s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Over on Monroe Hill?
That's right.
Yeah, they're in the 20s.
He was a professor of natural philosophy from 1825 to 1827. Another member, and I was just telling you about this guy, another member of the first faculty who's buried there was George Tucker. This guy had been born in 1775. He lived to the beginning of the Civil War, 1861. He was elected to the Virginia General Assembly in 1815. He served as a congressman in Washington, D.C. He was the first chairman of the faculty, and he taught moral philosophy, including ethics, metaphysics, logic, political economy, statistics, rhetoric, English composition. So this guy had a full plate. But what I find amazing about this guy is he wrote one of the one of America's first sci-fi novels. This guy wrote
a UVA novel, professor?
A UVA professor.
That's too cool.
Yeah, while he was here. So this is in 1825. He publishes a novel about a journey to the moon. Now, what's interesting is that Edgar Allan...
When was this?
In 1825, about a journey to
my
the moon.
Gosh.
In a balloon. Okay, so...
That is so cool.
We're talking about before Jules Verne. Before Verne, okay? Two generations before Jules Verne. Now, what I find even more fascinating is, check this out, okay? The very next year, Edgar Allan Poe was here, and then a few years later, Poe published a story of a journey to the moon in a balloon also. So I believe that George Tucker's novel was Poe's inspiration. Now, Poe's a much better writer, and of course, you know, Tucker's not known as a great writer.
And we don't have any proof, though,
but what you, could probably do, though, is you could probably go through and compare and find a lot of ideas or similar phrases.
And has anyone ever done that?
Nobody's ever done that. I've looked at them. I've compared them briefly.
There's got to be an English...
I believe that Poe was influenced greatly by Tucker. I mean, he's here, you know...
Tucker's obviously one of his teachers.
Tucker was not one of his teachers.
He's not?
Tucker was a professor here. No, Tucker wasn't. Tucker was not one of his teachers.
Okay.
When Poe was here, he just studied languages. He studied modern languages.
Yeah, and he wasn't here
languages.
Very long.
He was only here for 10 months, Poe was. But anyway.
But still,
so
that's
Tucker
cool.
was here. Yeah, is that
There's
got to cool?
be some grad student in English out there looking for a paper to write.
Well, I think this would be a great paper. Another guy that's...
And wait a minute. So he's writing a science fiction
great?
Novel.
In 1825.
So Charlottesville could be the birth of American science fiction, science fiction in America.
I guess you could say that. But if you go into early science fiction, and I did this for a while, I looked this up, he is credited with being one of America's first sci-fi writers.
Where's the historic marker, man?
I know. Yeah, we need one. Yeah, with a little balloon on it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Another guy that was pretty amazing was Charles Scott Venable.
And this is somebody else who's buried right here in the University of Virginia Cemetery.
Prior to the Civil War, he was a professor at the universities of Georgia and South Carolina. But during the war, he served as an aide, a military aide to Robert E. Lee. So this is a guy who went through the entire war with Robert E. Lee. His nickname was Old Ven. He came here in 65 when the war ended and served for 31 years here as professor of mathematics. You know, what's amazing is you read about so many of these earlier professors, and this is what these guys did, and this is how they made their mark. You know, is by staying for a generation and a half, a professor.
And that, of course, is for whom Venable School is named.
That's
on
for whom
15th
Venable
Street
School
or 14th
here.
Street.
Yeah,
right.
Another guy who was really amazing, who taught the law, who's buried at UVA Cemetery, is John Barbie Minor. And he came here in 1845. He was only 32 years old. He was for a while, he was the only professor of law. And I found a great quote of him. This guy was considered at the time the finest law professor of an entire Southern generation. And this quote I thought was amazing, that he had the ability with his powers of analysis to cut the law into thin slices.
Ooh, I like that.
And
imagery.
I like that a lot. Yeah, he could analyze things so minutely. So
his family
detailed. Lived
at what is now the UVA corner. And their house, if you look at the student bookstore is in a commercial building that is built onto the front of an old home.
Right.
And if you go back into the corner parking lot, you can really see it. You're like, oh, wow, there's the house. And there's the little addition, the 1920s addition, literally onto the front of the house. That was the Minor house. That's where they had lived at one time.
And, of course, Minor in 1865, in that first week in March, you know, he had been appointed by the university faculty to chair a committee to make sure the University of Virginia was not burned by Sheridan and Custer's men as they came through. And so it was Minor out there on
waving the flag,
waving the white flag and surrendering the University of Virginia to George Armstrong Custer.
The Custer.
The Custer.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Let's continue our discussion with Rick Britton about the very historic University of Virginia Cemetery. You were saying during the break that folks can actually stop by and there are little places where you can pick up this pamphlet that you wrote, right?
Yeah, about 6 years ago, I put together a little brochure. It's called University of Virginia Cemetery Walking Tour. And at each one of the two major entrances to the University Cemetery, not the entrance to the Confederate Cemetery, there are little dispensers, these little bronze dispensers. And you open the top, and hopefully they should be stuffed with these. They usually are when
now,
I check on it.
Make the distinction. There's a University of Virginia Cemetery, and there's a Confederate Cemetery.
Yeah, just to the, I guess that would be the south.
Southwest.
And it looks like it's attached to it is a Confederate Cemetery that's about half again the size of the University of Virginia
and
Cemetery.
And was it like 2,000 guys or else?
No, it's 1,197.
Okay.
In the Confederate Cemetery.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of people, yeah.
So who else is in the University of Virginia Cemetery?
Well, one of my favorite guys over there is William Holmes McGuffey. McGuffey is from was born in Pennsylvania, but the guy was really brilliant. Born in 1800, he became a professor, president of Cincinnati College in 1836. He's only 36 years old. Became a president 4 years later of Ohio University. And he came here in 1845 to take up the position of the chair of moral philosophy and remained, oh gosh, until 1873. And of course, McGuffey is famous as the compiler of the McGuffey readers. And what's amazing is
the original Dick and Jane books.
Yeah, the primers. They're reading primers. And there's six of them. And the way it worked out is if you start with number one, you know, it's fairly simple. You know, and as you progress through them numerically, they get more and more difficult. And, you know, you have little quizzes on vocabulary and things like that. A lot of people call him the author, but he didn't actually write these things. They're stories like from things that had been written by Parson Weems. In fact, this is the reason that everybody believed for the longest time that George Washington had chopped down the cherry tree is because McGuffey had taken the story out of Parson Weems's biography of George Washington and put it in the McGuffey readers.
So all the school kids in America grew
all
up reading it.
You know, reading it as if it was fact.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, stories, you know, the what do you call them? Fairy tales and all
fables.
Kinds of fables. Yeah, yeah. From Greece.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. And what is fascinating about these is that they remained in print until 1925, and they were being used. The reason there were so many of these things sold, and I'll tell you a minute in the number, I looked this up and it astounds everybody, is because the Western states were opening up and the schools were just opening, the public education in the Western states, and they needed, you know, vast numbers of these. And so his publishing company would contract with an entire state to supply these.
Oh, wow.
So we're talking about selling, you know, by the ton. So between 1836, when the first one came out, and 1925, 122 million copies of the McGuffey readers were sold in the United States.
My Lord.
So his books sold in the U.S. second only to the Bible. So this man had a huge influence on our country.
Where is the historic marker?
Yeah, we need a historic marker.
Need another historic marker. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to fill up Charlottesville.
The obvious question, did he get rich?
No, he didn't get rich. He
signed
over.
He didn't have a lawyer.
Yeah,
he didn't have an agent.
Yeah, he didn't have an agent, and he did them basically for a pittance, but his publishing company got rich.
Wow. And, of course, he brought fame and acclaim to the University of Virginia.
He absolutely
did. The
home
of the famous Professor McGuffey.
He absolutely did. And he lived in Pavilion Number 9, and there was the famous McGuffey ash that unfortunately died a few years back.
Yeah, I remember when they took that down.
And was replaced by another ash tree. But it was under that ash where he would gather together the sons and daughters of fellow professors, and he would test out the stories on them.
Wow.
So I think that's just a really touching scene to see this old Guff, he was called, you know, sitting there with all these kids listening to him to, you know, read these
and
stories.
And again, just so people know, you can go over to the University of Virginia Cemetery and find one of these little bronze things, open them up, And there is your walking tour.
That's
and
right.
It's free. You just pick
absolutely
it up.
Absolutely free.
And it'll guide you through the cemetery and tell you
map.
These stories.
Yeah, it has a little map and there are numbers that show you where these people are. So you can go through the cemetery and find all these,
too
all
cool.
these different folks.
I got time for one more. One
okay,
quick one.
This guy's amazing. Jesse Wakefield Beams lived from 1898 to 1977. During World War II, he was part of the Manhattan Project while he was teaching physics here at the University of Virginia. His contribution to the Manhattan Project, well, he invented the ultra centrifuge capable of spinning tiny objects at 1 million revolutions per second. And it was the ultra centrifuge that was used to separate U-235 from U-238 and U-234.
Oh, yeah.
And make the
yeah.
bomb.
I got one in my shed.
Yeah, you got one? You got it at Walmart? Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart will sell you one. So he invented it. And that's like a huge part of the bomb, I guess.
It was a
huge part
of the bomb.
They couldn't do it without that.
No, they couldn't have done it without it.
Amazing. And they're all right here in the UVA Cemetery. Thank you so much, Rick.
You're welcome.
Rick Britton, online at rickbritton.com, joins us every Friday to talk local history. A break here at the top of the hour for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now. News Radio 1070 WINA.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.